As we begin this morning, I'd like you to think about a question. What are the moments that define you? The points of time in your life that have made you who you are. You might think of moments where you worked really hard for something, and then the moment of truth came, right? Kind of like Vivian yesterday, had her first ever at-bat in T-ball. After a whole month of practice, stood up there at the plate, hit the ball about 12 feet, which was really cool. Maybe you think of a piano recital, high school graduation, college graduation, job interview, marriage proposal, birth of a child. These are all moments that define us, but I think as followers of Christ, we are aware that often our defining moments are very different. Often our defining moments come in times of brokenness, times of trial we never thought we'd face. I think our experience testifies to this. So many memories come to my mind as I think about that. I'm sure the same is going on for you. Well, our friend Jacob is going to have a defining moment today. Maybe the defining moment. We're kind of at the high point in the story of his life. All the events we've seen so far, every experience he's had, has been building up to this. It's been preparing him for this moment. See, Jacob is on his way home, and he's about to have an encounter with Esau. You remember Esau, right? Jacob's Neanderthal brother. The one that Jacob had swindled multiple times over and over again, taking advantage of him. The one that Jacob was running away from for fear of his life. Well, after 20 years in hiding, 20 years living with Laban, the time of reckoning has come for Jacob. He's almost back to the land of promise. He's got one obstacle in his way. And it's Esau. So we wonder at this point, we wonder about Esau. We haven't seen him for 20 years. What's he been doing these 20 years? Playing the events of his life over and over again in his head? Thinking about all the ways that Jacob has wronged him? Maybe his rage has had 20 years to fester and grow like an open sore. We wonder about Jacob, too. I wonder what's been on his mind these 20 years as it pertains to Esau. I wonder how many times when he was, you know, being tricked by Laban, working in the cold night or the hot sun of the day, I wonder how many times he thought, well, at least I don't have to face Esau. It could be worse, right? But now he has to face Esau. Well, we're going to look at two chapters today, Genesis 32 and 33. It's a lot of stuff in here, two whole chapters. Really, these chapters should be one chapter in our Bibles. I don't know who divided the Bible up into chapters and verses, but sometimes I think they don't know what they were talking about. These should be one chapter because they go together. We're going to see Jacob have three separate encounters. And as we see these three encounters, we're going to learn right alongside Jacob that we can walk with confidence through the trials that define us. Walking with confidence is kind of going to be our theme this morning. That's the title of the message. I totally dropped the ball and forgot to give Geneva sermon notes. So if we had sermon notes, that would be right at the top of the page. Walk with confidence. So through these difficult, pressure-packed, scary trials, we're going to see three reasons why we can walk with confidence. The reason for that is because we're going to see our awe-inspiring God in each of these encounters. It's not anything we can do. It's His power that gives us confidence. So with that, let's begin. Chapter 32, the first 21 verses, is our first encounter. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight." And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you. And there are 400 men with him. Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He divided the people who were with him and the flocks and herds and camels into two camps, thinking, if Esau comes to the one camp and attacks it, then the camp that is left will escape. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he stayed there that night, and from what he had with him, he took a present for his brother Esau, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their calves, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. These he handed over to his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, pass on ahead of me and put a space between drove and drove. He instructed the first, when Esau my brother meets you and asks you, to whom do you belong? Where are you going? And whose are these ahead of you? Then you shall say, they belong to your servant, Jacob. They are a present sent to my lord Esau, and moreover, he is behind us. He likewise instructed the second and the third and all who followed the droves, you shall say the same thing to Esau when you find him. And you shall say, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes ahead of me, and afterward I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. So this first meeting that I mentioned that Jacob encounters is in verses 1 and 2. He meets the angels of God. Now I'll echo the sentiments of our friend Doug. These angels of God are not babies with wings. There's no harps, there's no heart-shaped arrows involved here. Really, this is a meeting that if you or I walked into this situation, we would be terrified. Jacob actually speaks in military terms when he said, this is God's camp. What Jacob is seeing here, the angels that he has just met, are the armies of heaven. But I love Jacob's reaction here because it says so much in so few words. Jacob is not afraid the way that you and I would be. His reaction to the armies of God is confidence. Did you notice in verse 2? He said, this is God's camp. Okay, he's basically saying, great, good, this is cool. Now why would he react that way? Well, Jacob has seen God keep his promises over and over and over again. That's the first reason why we can walk with confidence in these trials that define our lives. We can walk with confidence because, I hope you're not getting tired of hearing this, we can walk with confidence because God keeps his promises. If there's one thing you take out of this series, the whole life of Jacob, it's that truth. That's why I keep saying it. God keeps his promises. So as we think back to the life that we've seen so far with Jacob, we've heard God say, I will be with you. And God has been with him. He's done great things. He's protected him. He's provided for him. We've seen God tell Jacob that he would be a blessing to all nations, and we saw that take place as Laban prospered. Laban didn't deserve it, but simply because Jacob was there working for him, he found prosperity. God had promised Jacob descendants. Hope you're remembering these promises. We're going through them almost every week. We saw in chapter 30 many descendants, many sons that God gave to Jacob, the foundation for a new country. And God had promised land to Jacob. And here he is. He's almost to the promised land now. Jacob has seen the strange grace of God, if you remember back a few weeks ago. Despite his own failures, his own sins, his own obstacles, God has been faithful to his word. And he always is. You know, God even used some of those weaknesses, some of those sins and mistakes to fulfill his promises. So we think back to the ladder, right? Jacob had this vision of a ladder, and at that time, God showed up in the vision, and Jacob was petrified, right? He thought, there's only one reason why God would be here right now, and that's to judge me, because I've messed up everything. What a change we have in Jacob now, right? He sees the armies of heaven, and God's presence now represents peace to him. It's reassuring. He knows that God is for him, not against him. For the rest of this first meeting, we saw Jacob giving us a picture of the fruit that is born in our lives when we have this confidence in God's promises. It really transforms our lives. And I love the example he sets for us, because he shows us so many great things, but they're also really simple things. And when we're in the middle of craziness, these trying times that define us, we need to be reminded of some simple things that can keep us on track. So two things Jacob shows us in his reaction after he sees God's army. First thing he shows us is that he shows us what walking by faith really looks like. It's not about crossing your fingers, bracing for the worst, hoping it doesn't happen. Jacob didn't run back to his tent and curl up in the fetal position and just pray that it would be over soon. Jacob actually took action. He puts his faith on display, not thinking, sorry, I lost my place. Just one second. Or he's not thinking, oh man, this situation with Esau, this is going to be bad. I really hope these angels can handle it. He just goes back and starts making preparations to meet Esau. He just does the common sense thing. What's the next step? That's what I'll do. So he sends messengers, right? He sent messengers out to Esau, and they came back and said, Esau has 400 men with him. Now, in that day, if you had a problem that required a militia, the standard number of men you would gather together to go take care of that problem would be 400. So that number is really important. We can see why Jacob becomes afraid at this point. I love that too. That's okay. Being afraid doesn't mean you lack faith. What I'm getting at is that faith for Jacob here and for us is not this nonsensical, naive belief and hope in emptiness that everything is just going to turn out okay. Jacob goes on, he makes more and more preparations to meet Esau. He sends these gifts ahead of him, right? This grand procession. Hundreds of animals in groups. You can just imagine Esau sitting at his camp, and group after group after group of animals is showing up, and the people keep saying, these are from Jacob. These are from Jacob. Shows a great deal of respect and humility for Esau. What we're seeing with Jacob here is that there are big problems ahead, problems that are pretty scary. But he simply acts on his faith. He doesn't go back to his tent and beg for a miracle, right? If it's me in this situation, I'm headed back to my tent and praying that God would send a meteorite and an earthquake and some dinosaurs. Those are the three things I thought of this week. Send those all to Esau's camp, God. I need you to do something. But Jacob simply does what needs to be done next. You know, what he really reminds me here of is something that my dad has hammered into me for my whole life. And he continues to hammer this into me every time I talk to him. I guess I'm a slow learner. But my dad always tells me this. He says, you do the next logical thing for God. See, we have this tendency when these trials come, we get all bent out of shape. We get into panic mode, right? But Jacob knows one thing. God keeps his promises. So when he's afraid, he doesn't run and hide. He doesn't get all caught up looking for fantastic displays of God's miraculous power. He does what makes sense, and he has this confidence because he knows it's in God's hands, and God has a great track record. He's free to do that because he knows if what makes sense to me doesn't work out, God still keeps his promises. So I'll just do the next logical thing for God. I love how practical that is. That comes back time and time again in my life. The other practical example that Jacob gives us that we need to hear so badly this morning is prayer. His prayer is really the centerpiece of this section of the chapter, and it's actually the longest prayer written in the whole book of Genesis. It's a pretty important moment in Jacob's life. So Jacob knows God keeps his promises, so he has confidence in God's goodness, and when fear strikes, he knows where to turn. Got to pray. It's the only option. Did you catch the humility in Jacob's voice in verse 10? I love what he says there. I'm not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness you have shown to your servant. I love that statement. I am not worthy. We know that's true. We've seen his life. And we know that's true of our lives as well. And I love how God-centered his prayer is. There's no accusation. There's no panic. He's afraid, but he's not panicking here. From beginning to end in this prayer, Jacob is basically saying to God, Lord, I trust you, and I want whatever you want for my life. It's a prayer that I think is appropriate to us in every season of life. God, I want what you want. But don't lose the main point here. As Jacob prepares for Esau, and as he prays, all of his actions are based upon the fact that God keeps his promises. That's where his confidence comes from. And that's where our confidence needs to come from. We need to latch on to God's promises. We need to remember them. We need to pray them as we're on our knees before the Lord. We don't have time to read these, but I'm going to give you some homework today. Grab your bulletin, grab an offering envelope, grab something, and write down these four passages. These are passages of promise that God has given to us because of Christ. Promises that we need to swallow them and digest them and let them become a part of who we are. Ready? Yeah? Okay, first one. Romans chapter 8, verses 31 to 39. That's Romans 8, 31 through 39. I apologize. I wanted to have cards typed up for these, and I forgot that too. My bad. That was Romans 8, 31 to 39. The second one is 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 19 through 22. 2 Corinthians 1, 19 to 22. Then we have 1 John 5, 1 through 5. Repeat that one again. 1 John 5, 1 through 5. And the last one is 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 9. 1 Peter 1, 3 through 9. If I read those too fast and you missed them, I'll be around. You can find me and I'll give them to you later after the service. But make those maybe the topic of discussion around dinner today. We need to hang on to these promises. It's the source of our confidence. It's what allows us to walk with confidence in the defining moments of our lives. All right, meeting number two. We'll pick it up in Genesis 32, verse 22. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and Jacob was left alone. And the man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day has broken." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the people of Israel do not eat the sinew of the thigh that is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip on the sinew of the thigh. So this time, this second meeting, Jacob doesn't meet God's army, he meets God himself. And it's such a weird encounter, a strange meeting, right? The story is just really bizarre, but I think what it shows us is this. We can walk with confidence because God knows better than we do. Walk with confidence because God knows better than we do. Here's what I mean by that. When we come to these trying times, these defining moments, we're usually pretty good at identifying the problem, right? We're pretty good at pointing the finger and saying, you or that is the cause of all this stress. And it was the same with Jacob. He wanted to get to the promised land, and he knew Esau is in my way. That is the problem. It's obvious. But God saw it differently. Jacob wanted to get into the promised land, and Jacob was the one who was in the way, according to God. See, Jacob had grown in many ways. He had given up deceit. His will now matches God's will, as we saw in his prayer. But God knows something. God knows that Jacob still has his strength, his physical strength. So God knows that Jacob will still be tempted to take all the credit. He knows that Jacob will still be threatened by pride. And so when Jacob continues his plan for escaping from Esau, he sends his family and all the possessions he has left across the river in the middle of the night. God decides it's time to take care of this pride problem. In my imagination, I just picture Jacob standing at the bank of this river. It's pitch black. So he's watching his family float off into the river until he can't see them anymore. They disappear into the darkness. And for some reason, in my mind, he turns around and immediately there's a man running at him at the speed of an all-pro linebacker, about three steps away, and he puts a shoulder right in his gut. And this epic battle ensues that we just read about. During that battle, He simply touches Jacob's hip. And with that one touch, he takes all of Jacob's strength away. Did you notice the change in Jacob's goals at that point? He's no longer fighting with God. He's no longer wrestling. We start seeing this word, clinging. He just hangs on for dear life. That is such a great picture of what our relationship with God should be like. You know, we talk about these trials, these defining moments. I wonder, maybe the defining moments for us are those times when we're praying and it seems like our words are bouncing off the ceiling, but we keep praying. We cling to Christ. Maybe it's the times when we are seeking God and His Word and just getting nothing out of it, but we keep reading, we keep going, because we're clinging to God. Maybe it's when we're at our weakest. Maybe those are the moments that define us. It seems that that's what God had in mind for Jacob. And after taking his physical strength, God goes to an even deeper level. He asks this question to kind of strip Jacob of his inner strength as well. He says, "What is your name?" Verse 27, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Listen to the words of Victor Hamilton, an Old Testament scholar, on this point. He says, "In disclosing his name, Jacob is doing more than just sharing information. He's making a confession about the appropriateness of his name." Remember when Jacob and Esau were born? Jacob was given the name Jacob because it sounds like the word heel in Hebrew. He was holding on to Esau's heel. He was tripping him. It gives the sense of deceit. And Jacob here says, "I have to be honest, that's me. I have no right to stand before you, Lord." So Jacob is now broken in body and in spirit, and really God has him right where he wants him at this point. But he doesn't have him at this point for a knockout punch. God gives Jacob a new name, Israel. It means God shall rule. God shall rule. Speaks to the transformation in Jacob's life, right? This strong man, this witty man who had it all figured out, could do it all himself, is now at the point where that's all he can say. And that's what defines who he is. God shall rule over me. His new name fits well with his new limp. Bruce Waltke, another scholar, says this: "The limp is the posture of the saint, walking not in physical strength, but in spiritual strength. In verse 30, we see Jacob's reaction to all that he has just experienced. It's a really important verse to understand the story here. It says, "So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, 'For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered.'" Now, if you're like me, you jump right to Isaiah, and you hear about seeing God face to face and still living. But Jacob didn't say, "I've seen God face to face and lived." He says, "My life has been delivered." That takes us right back to verse 11, where Jacob was praying. He said, "Please deliver me. Please deliver me." Right there, Jacob's prayer is answered. That's what he's saying. He said, "I've seen God. God has come and answered my prayer." At that moment in verse 30, he knows that God is going to save him from Esau. He says, "God has delivered my life." See, Jacob is confident here, and he's confident because God has brought him to a deeper level of brokenness. In the same way, we ought all of us ought to walk in confidence because God knows what we need better than we do. So that was our second meeting. Let's get to chapter 33. We'll try to get through this in our last couple of minutes here. The third meeting, 33 verse 1. "And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants. And he put the servants with their children in front, then Leah with her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And when Esau lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, 'Who are these with you?' Jacob said, 'The children whom God has graciously given your servant.' Then the servants drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Leah and likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And last, Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. Esau said, 'What do you mean by all this company that I met?' Jacob answered, 'To find favor in the sight of my Lord.' But Esau said, 'I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself.' Jacob said, 'No, please, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. For I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God, and you have accepted me. Please accept my blessing that is brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough.' Thus he urged him, and he took it. Then Esau said, 'Let us journey on our way, and I will go ahead of you.' But Jacob said to him, 'My Lord knows that the children are frail, and that the nursing flocks and herds are a care to me. If they are driven hard for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on ahead of his servant, and I will lead on slowly at the pace of the livestock that are ahead of me, and at the pace of the children until I come to my Lord in Seir.' So Esau said, 'Let me leave with you some of the people who are with me.' But he said, 'What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord.' So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir, but Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built himself a house and booths for his livestock. Therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. On his way from Padan Aram, and he camped before the city, and from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. There he erected an altar and called it El Elohe Israel." So that's our third meeting, the one we've all been anticipating, right? Jacob finally meets up with Esau. And as you noticed, as we read, it goes better than any of us could have hoped. That shows us a third truth about our God. We should walk with confidence because God transforms people. God transforms people. We've seen the transformation in Jacob's life, right? This faithless con artist is now a man whose very identity is defined by God's ruling. We saw his humility in the way that he approached Esau. Even here, he seems to be dishonest for a moment because he tells Esau, I'll follow you to Seir, to your home. But he goes the opposite direction once Esau has left. But considering all the respect that he has given to Esau and the ways he's addressed him and bowed to him and all the gifts, it seems likely that he's just graciously separating from Esau. I mean, what's the eternal alternative to that? Esau, don't forget, I'm the blessed one. God has a different home for me, the promised land. It wouldn't seem to fit with his humility. I think anything else he would have said would have come across this way. So he doesn't deceive Esau here. I think both men understood that Jacob was graciously saying, it just wouldn't work out for me to follow you. But we also see that not only Jacob, but Esau is transformed here too. Somehow, we're not told how, but over 20 years, his anger has dissolved. He forgives Jacob. We see deep brotherly love. Now, there's no indication that he has met God or come to faith here. Surely, Scripture would have told us if such a miraculous thing had taken place, right? But God still changes him. Changes him deeply. That's how powerful our God is. It can even change Esau. So the story of reconciliation is amazing. And you know what? It wouldn't have been possible without all the trials, all the defining moments that Jacob and Esau have experienced, all the strife between them. The power of God to transform is on full display here, and that should strengthen us to walk with confidence. Now, Jacob's life doesn't end here. We've still got a couple of weeks left. But in verse 18, we start to get a little sense of closure, right? It says he goes to Shechem, this city, and we see these wonderful words, Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. No longer is Jacob enslaved by Laban. No longer is he afraid of Esau. No longer does he walk on his own strength. But he's walking with confidence in God, and he's arrived in the promised land. We saw it going on into verse 19, in verse 20, that the first thing on Jacob's to-do list when he got home was to build this altar. And he names it God, the God of Israel. That's what it means when it says El Elohe Israel. God, the God of Israel. Remember what Israel means. God shall rule. This is Jacob's way of saying, God, I give myself to you. I place myself under your rule because I've seen that you are good. So as we consider these three meetings this morning with the angels of God, this army, with God himself, and then Jacob and Esau reuniting, how could we do anything else but respond in the same way as Jacob? Now, I'm speaking figuratively, of course. We're not going to build an altar here this morning, that would be a little weird. But in this passage, we behold a God who keeps his promises. A God who knows better than we do. A God who can transform anyone. So we're going to close in song, and as we sing, and even going ahead into this week, as we face these moments that define us, these times of trial, these things that shape us, they stretch us, they stress us out, may we, with Jacob, acknowledge that God rules over us. May we stand in awe of his goodness. May we come back to these truths and to this God time and time again and walk in confidence in him. Would you pray with me as the praise team comes? Father, we thank you for the confidence that you give us. We thank you that it's not confidence in our own strength, our own ability, our own goodness, but our confidence is in you. And you're so worthy of being trusted. God, I don't know what each person in this room is facing, what defining moments are ahead of them, what trials they have in mind. But I know that you are a God that we can trust. I pray for each one of us that we would do that this week. We ask all of these things in your name. Amen.